If you've experienced a loss of motivation, energy, or sex drive, or if you're noticing that you're a little softer around the middle than you used to be, it could be your testosterone levels have dropped. By the time men reach the age of 30, in most cases, their T levels have started to decline, and low T can lead to a loss of muscle mass, depression, lack of energy, and a low sex drive. The good news is now you have your remedy with Test X9. This stuff is the real deal, guys. This formula has 9 clinically proven ingredients to naturally boost your body's own testosterone production. Experience increases in strength, energy, and sex drive, as well as improved mood and well-being. Feedback has been awesome. Guys in their 30s and 40s have reported waking up with the quote-unquote morning wood for the first time since they were teenagers. If you want to take it to the next level, you can maximize your results with the Ultimate Test Stack, which combines the Test X9 with the T-Assist, an estrogen control and liver support blend, and Recovery PM, an amazing sleep aid that has had incredible feedback for helping people to get the best sleep they've ever had without feeling groggy that next day. You'll be amazed with the effect of raising your T levels and improving your sleep will have on your overall performance and well-being. Don't settle for average. Man up at LegacySupps.com. That is LegacySupps.com. And use the promo code Sullivan for an additional 10% off your entire order. That's LegacySupps.com. And use that promo code Sullivan for 10% off your entire order for the best health and workout supplements out there. This is Pro Wrestler approved. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, J.P. John Paz. Of course, joining me, the star of the show, the former WWE and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the man behind the 83 Weeks of Dominance, the NWO, WCW's domination. He is none other than the Taskmaster, the Games Master, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
Good, J.P. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing very good. What do you think about the crazy wrestling world we now live in with Vince stepping down and not seeming to care, just seeming to, you know, move on and be on TV every week?
Well, you know, he's like the captain of the ship. He ain't going to blink. He's Vince McMahon. I mean, because I think that some people think, you know, that's too much, but he built that company, so he's going to do what he wants to do. He's a unique individual, and like him or not, I think he's going to, you know, either rise with it or go down with it. Be interesting.
What do you think about the Johnny Ace revelation that he's at administrative leave? That he's not stepping down, per se, but, you know, he's out of the picture, right, as far as head of talent relations.
Well, here's the thing. I hate to, you know, say anything because we don't know everything. I'm not even sure what they're kind of hinting that he's done? I've heard a bunch of things. What have you heard?
A lot of, like, sexual harassment stuff, using his power, supposedly, to get with some of the divas and maybe sleep around a little bit and make some promises in exchange for the promises. So, I mean, it's all rumor and innuendo, but that's what I've heard as far as maybe using his power for some sexual advances.
Yeah, I mean, unless they have these women to step up to the plate and talk, if it is true, where do they go? I mean, do they just spin in a circle? I mean, it's not a good look right now, but who knows, right?
Right. You think that this would hurt them at all? I mean, the stock is down a little bit, but the ratings have been up.
I think the ratings are up because, see if this makes sense to you. It's the summertime, people are doing things, they've kind of forgot about wrestling, is in a little bit of a slump. All of a sudden, oh, the WWE, hey, let's turn in this tonight and see what's going on. There's some stuff I've been hearing on the news about. It's almost like they've driven people to watch the program again. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's almost like the genius of Vince. It's like scandalous stuff. People are kind of interested in it.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I know a bunch of people that just, you know, haven't watched in a while. They're like, wait, this whole thing is going on with Vince, all the stuff I'm reading, and he's going to be on TV? So they, like, were desperate to see what he said. I mean, he didn't have much to say. He didn't say much, but they were all desperate to tune in because they thought he might have something to say.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting over the next few weeks to see what really transpired and whatever it did. I mean, I wonder who will end up with this if they force Vince out. I don't think they can, but who knows?
What do you think about Stephanie being the interim CEO? Is that just, placating for the masses, or is there anything legitimate to it?
I think it's done for the stockholders. I mean, she's the closest thing to Vince in my eyes. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
She's a McMahon. She's a woman, a strong woman. I think it placates a lot of holes for them, especially with the stockholders and that a McMahon is still in charge.
Very true, yep. And I think that when she was put down as far as her position of chief brand officer, I think they knew that she was going to step into the position. You know what I mean? Like, she's not chief brand officer anymore. She's got, taking a leave of absence, supposedly. I think they were just gearing her up to be the interim CEO.
It could be. I mean, it could be. I never thought of it like that, but you're probably right. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Yeah.
The wacky world of wrestling. And, you know, there's another thing that's been thrown out there a lot is that Vince and Linda have been separated for a while. They haven't even been together. So technically it wouldn't really be an affair. It's just that making sure that, you know, it was his money and not company money that he was paying off this woman with, hush money, if you will.
Right. I mean, that's what the whole, I believe, that we've been led to believe, that's what this whole thing is about. Whose money was it that he paid off, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And Vince has been so cocky about it, and he said it was his money. So, I mean, I don't know what they're really going to get him on as far as that.
I don't either.
Have you heard anything about him and Linda being together or not being together? Have you heard anything?
I mean, you know, I haven't heard anything, but nothing would surprise me. I mean, you know, they do probably lead separate lives.
Man, look at Vince. Still going strong at 76. You know what I mean? He's,
yeah.
He's as virile as ever.
Yeah. You know, and He didn't run and hide like a lot of people would have on this kind of scandalous situation. So you got to admire that.
And your buddy, Jerry McDivitt, your old friend, I guess he was supposed to be retiring, and now he's not. He's got one more big case left in him before retirement.
It sure looks like he got one last run, huh?
He's like one of the boys. You know, hey, one last run, one last match. Come on. Today I wanted to do a big Q&A. We've done one of these before, and there were so many questions that, whew, I still have so many. There's no way we'll be able to get to all of them, but we'll get to most, or we'll get to some of them. Let's start off with James Fitzpatrick sent a question for you. What were your overall thoughts on the WCW tapings at MGM Studios? I went to the theme park regularly, but was not old enough to remember all of that. Anything that you would have done differently? Do you think it was a win-win for both parties involved? Crazy to think about it now. So what do you think about WCW at the MGM?
Yeah, it was a win-win for both parties. But with the networking, that's what the win was. It was very hard because you were booking TV for 3 months out. So you couldn't really have a lot of belts on people. Do you know what I'm saying, JP?
Mm-hmm.
And that caused problems because if you had belts on, maybe they had somebody had gotten hurt and they didn't have the belts 3 months later or 2 months later. But all in all, it ran really efficiently. I mean, as crazy as it was, it ran efficiently. And it was good for the guys to be in one place and they could relax and kind of take some time off from the road.
Created that or started that. Who was the one that was the genesis? That was all Eric Bischoff.
Yeah. Well, actually, Mike Graham had gone to them when him and Steve Kern were trying to redo Championship Wrestling from Florida, and they got in there, and then the backers for Kern, I believe, the backers for Kern and Mike didn't come through with the money, so then when Mike went up there, he talked to Eric. And that's how kind of Eric pursued it, and he did a hell of a job getting it.
Do you like how, you know, some of the audience aren't necessarily wrestling fans? Is that good or bad?
I think it's good. I think it's good. It exposes them to something. And, hey, if you pick up some casual wrestling fans along the way, I think it was, it's very good to expose fans to the business. So I think it was a positive thing.
What a partnership for WCW, like as far as just on the grand scale, right?
Right. I mean, it gave them a lot of notoriety to be there.
Instant credibility, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Question is from Lauren. With regard to litigation over Razor Ramon's likeness, why was this never an issue for Randy Savage or for Hulk Hogan?
Well, Randy and Hulk own their likenesses. Where Razor was given, Scott was given the Razor Ramon character. You got to remember, Randy Savage was Randy Savage way before he got the New York Hulk, too. You know, Hulk was given the Hulk Hogan name by Vince Sr. And it was also something to do with Marvel Comics that they had to pay to use the Hulk Hogan name. Because it was Hulk, you know what I mean? But they came in owning their own intellectual likenesses, where Razor didn't.
For, you know, a little bit before that, but with him, I know obviously you went to court and had some litigation because of Razor Ramon and Diesel, right?
Right, right. And I think they turned a full duty, you know, and they acquiesced to the WWE's demands. I'm not sure what it was, but I'm sure ended up paying a fine or something.
Did you think like this was legit? Because I know we talked about this like several weeks ago, but like if you go back and watch Diamond Stud, he has the toothpick, he's talking like, you know, he's doing the same gimmick. So, I mean, surprising that that wasn't brought up, like, on the WCW side, to say this is going to be shut down because Diamond Stud was Razor Ramon before Razor Ramon was Razor Ramon. You know what I mean?
Right, right. I don't think that Turner's lawyers, that they weren't as sharp as Jerry. Jerry's a very sharp guy. And, you know, he knows the wrestling business where these people didn't know the wrestling business, you know. It was like an amateur fighter going against Mike Tyson. They weren't ready for Jerry McDivitt.
Good point. Very, very true. Next question from Flaskenstein. When Conan was still a face and shortly after Mysterio and the other luchadors debuted, was there any serious discussion of at least a TV taping in Mexico to show a U.S. audience to illustrate just how big of a talent these guys are received there? So was there ever any thoughts of doing a taping in Mexico?
Yeah, Antonio Penda, I believe that was how you said his name, the guy that owned AAA with Conan, I think it was after the first, second rather. What's the big show? Their anniversary show?
Triple Mania.
Yeah, I think after the second one, they came for a meeting. We're actually going to do a co-event in Mexico City, but I think logistically and legally things fell through. But yeah, there had been a lot of thought put into it.
With all those luchadors there, you think that, you know, it would have been a big deal because WCW is associated, or, you know, you just think that they're a big deal anyway? You know what I mean? You think that they're stars in their own right?
I think it would have showed people how big of stars they were if we were down in Mexico in front of 60,000 people. You know what I mean?
Speaking of luchadors, JD sends us a question. Do you have any good La Parca stories? He was by far my favorite luchador from Nitro and still is my favorite. So what about La Parca?
Terrific performer. Terrific. And the thing about La Parca, I mean, over 25 years later, he's still going strong. He did a hell of a job there. Hell of a job.
Camera to the board.
Chairman of the board.
Now, a lot of, you know, guys that are kind of not against the luchadors per se, but, you know, like a lot of the guys that are just not as familiar with them, do you think them not knowing English hurt them that much? Because that's always like the argument from the other side. It's like, oh, they didn't know English. That's why they couldn't get over as much. But do you believe in that? Is that true at all?
I think it hurt them somewhat because, you know, Ray got over, right? Spoke English. Conan got over, spoke English. Most of them didn't have enough background in English, you know what I mean, to get over. But their work was so different. It set them apart. If they could have talked, it would have really helped them because I think that's what helped and separated Ray and Conan.
Who do you think was the best luchador in WCW?
Ray? Yeah. Without question.
So the next question is from the Total Lackage. Assuming the Road Warriors stayed during their prime in 1996, how would they have been used in terms of the NWO angle? As a kid, I always pictured them next to Sting at Bash at the Beach.
Yeah, they would have been on WCW side, that's for sure. But there, that's a very interesting question. How do you book the Road Warriors? We'll say the Road Warriors is thing against Hogan, Nash, and Hall. It looks terrific. It's going to draw. What do you do?
And usually, you know, the NWO would be running roughshod. Can you really do that against the Road Warriors? You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to get beat up every week. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm getting at. And what do you do? I mean, now you got them, and they didn't sell a lot, right?
Right.
What do you do to kill both teams? You got to be very, very smart, and you got to get with I would think you would get with the NWO guys and say, hey, you got to help us out here and figure out how we keep this thing going. It would be a very difficult thing, but it would have been big money done right.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because if you think about it, like, obviously LOD goes to WWF at that point and helps them tremendously, but what if they stayed? Yeah, like, I that's true. Like, what could you have done with them? You would have had a pretty strong WCW. I know you had, obviously, the Steiners and Luger and Sting and Flair, but imagine throwing the Road Warriors on top of that.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a whole different thought process, that's for sure.
That would have been pretty cool. And even if you guys still had Vader, that would have been cool. Vader against the NWO.
Right, right.
Speaking of the NWO, here's a question from Ben Jones. Did you have any other ideas on the direction of WCW if the NWO angle was a bust? So if the NWO angle failed in July of 96, like, did you have any other ideas of where you wanted to go?
I don't think there was a person that knew what was going to happen that thought the Hogan thing wasn't going to get over huge. It just solidified the whole thing. It made sense. It looked like New York was coming in against us. If it flopped, I don't know what they would have done. I really don't. It was going to work. It had to work.
When you're a booker, do you have backup plans or, like, just in case, or no?
Yeah, you should. But on this one, I think it's one of those times you're in Vegas and you take the dice and roll for a seven.
That is another interesting question, because it's like, okay, what if it didn't work? Like, where the hell would you guys have been?
Right.
Where would wrestling have been? If you think about it, the wrestling would have been down the shitter, just in general as a business, if it didn't work.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Question from Nick. Was there ever an attempt to work out some sort of business arrangement or promotion with Harley Davidson to retain the Hogwild name?
I'm sure that was in the North Tower. I'm sure, you know, they tried to do something on the corporate side. And something happened and didn't work out, but I'm sure they tried to do something.
Did you like Hogwild a name better or Roadwild?
Either one for me. I wasn't that. I liked Roadwild if push came to shove, but, you know, at that time, Harley Davidson was one of the hottest products in the world. So I thought they kind of blew their nut onto them, you know what I mean?
Yep. Was there a lawsuit there, or was there just them telling you to stop using the name when you guys used Hogwild?
I think there was a restraining order. That's what happened.
So basically never used it again. Basically, and obviously you guys didn't.
Right, right.
From Run, Rocky, Run. Who was that coming out behind Roddy Piper when he debuted at Halloween Havoc 1996? He never actually ended up making it to the ring. I think I've asked that before. Who was that with Roddy?
It was a guy that worked for Roddy. Was like his manservant. Yeah. Kind of a guy that looked like he was in shape at one time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was Roddy's assistant.
Not a wrestler, though, right?
No.
Yeah, that is such an interesting thing, because it's funny, because, you know, if you don't really pay attention, you won't know he's there. But he comes out with him, and then Piper walks the ring by himself.
Yeah.
Was that Roddy's call?
Yeah.
It's a great moment. Absolutely great. One of my favorite promos as far as him and Hogan going back and forth. So good. So memorable.
It was.
So Jack Frost has a question. When did Eric Bischoff decide he wanted to be a part of the NWO?
I think Nash and Hall talked to him about it. I think, you know, it was creatively a very smart thing to do. But we saw it coming, and it worked out well. But I think Nash and Hall and Eric sat down and came up with it.
Do you think that he always pictures himself as a part of the NWO, like from first inceptions?
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all.
That was another great turn, another great Piper promo when he basically calls him out and calls him a liar.
Yep.
When you think of NWO, do you think Bischoff being in it works, or do you think that's, okay, there's too many guys in it?
Oh, I think it really worked with Eric being in there.
So James Lomas asks, do you think the women's division could have worked in WCW?
Yeah, but we probably didn't have enough girls at the time. Enough girl performers. You know what I'm saying? Enough,
yep.
Enough girl wrestlers.
That's like a scouting thing? Do you think that's a talent thing? Like there wasn't enough good women? Like, or do you think it's maybe a combination of both?
I think it's a little bit of a combination of both, but you got to remember 25 years ago, there wasn't that many girl wrestlers, you know? And it kind of gone to the wayside, right?
Yep.
The only big draws back then was the Japanese girls.
Right, so you'd have to bring in them, basically, if you were going to do it.
Right.
It's not like it is today, where it seems like there's so much, like an abundance of good female talent out there.
Yes, there is. Some of them, they're great performers.
What was the reaction backstage at Nitro on the night of Tell Your Daddy He's Still Fired, Randy Anderson segment? That's from Daniel Hutchinson. Of course, that's the infamous Eric Bischoff telling him, tell your daddy he's still fired.
Yeah, well, everybody knew it was a work, you know what I mean? It wasn't legit. I thought it got a lot of heat.
Now, the North Tower, though, right? That's a different story. They thought it was legit, right?
Yeah. Which, you know, goes to show you the difference between WCW and Vince, right?
Yeah. That's just so funny. Like Harvey Schiller, whoever is calling Bischoff going, what the hell, you fired a guy in Nationals? Like, they had no idea what was going on, like, wrestling-wise. They didn't realize it was a storyline.
Exactly. So, you know, therefore, that's why Vince won out.
The next question is from Chris Connolly. Can you talk about Randy Savage joining Sting and the Rafters and then abruptly joining the NWO? What was the original plan? I've always been confused about how they ended up together and why they ended up together and the reason why you guys broke them up so quickly.
Randy was trying to figure out, in a good way, how to get the spotlight back on himself. And he first thought maybe going with Sting was it, but then he realized he belonged on the other side with them too, you know, the four of them. Meaning Hogan, Nash, Hall, and Randy were the four-headed monster, you know what I mean? So I think it was Randy called that one on his own.
Yeah, because that's funny. That is true. It kind of just ended quickly. Like, it was almost like Savage was against the NWO. He's with Sting. And then he really is with the NWO pretty much almost right after. Almost like a little bit of a swerve, I guess you could say. But, yeah, I guess that's more Randy's call, not your guys' call?
Yeah, it's Randy's call. Yeah. Lines would be sensitive, you know what I mean? You couldn't have Hogan with all creative control and not let the guys throw their 2 cents in, which got to be a little precarious situation. But Randy, even though he was a great businessman, looked out for himself, he was looking out for the good of the business. And it made more sense to me that he was in the NWO than it did him fighting it.
Gotcha. who would have been somebody from the WWF that you would have wanted to sign to WCW, but you were never able to? Like, who you could have signed but never did? This is from Johnny Dawson.
Oh, we'd love to have The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, but they weren't going to go. They weren't going to leave.
Have you heard what Bischoff had to say about, like, signing those two guys? It's kind of opposite of what you're saying.
What did he say?
So he was saying that he didn't want Michaels because he was a malcontent, and that putting him with Hall and Nash again would have created, like, a click atmosphere, and he didn't want that. And he said he would only have wanted The Undertaker if he can get The Undertaker by his name, like if he could own The Undertaker.
I see his point. I do see his point, especially the thing with not wanting to put Shawn with Kevin and Scott. I mean, they had been on probation to me long enough, but I understand that, you know, there's two sides to every coin, so I do understand that.
So the next question is from Ralph Laskowski. Arn Anderson brought it up on his podcast, and I agree. Why not leave Kurt Hennig in the Four Horsemen and have them go over in War Games and start a feud with the NWO?
I don't have any idea on that one. I think Arn's right, too. I thought Hennig was a perfect horseman.
Whose call was it to turn him heel?
I think Hogan wanted him on his side.
When you did that whole thing, I know we had a whole episode about it, and it's back in the archives, great stuff, going over when Hennig, you know, obviously turns on Flair and joins the NWO. Do you think it's almost too many guys? Like, I know always too many guys in the NWO, but too many top names. Like, now Mr. Perfect in the NWO, he would have been better suited to help out WCW.
Yeah, but Kurt was such a great worker, and to me, I thought as a heel, even though he was a great babyface as a heel, he was perfect.
If he did stay with the Horsemen, would that have meant like the Horsemen would get a little bit of a push? Because after that, you know, the Horsemen, they don't do much. I mean, it was almost like the Horsemen were you know, fodder, like their background to the NWO. Do you think if he stays the Horsemen, they actually get, you know, a bit of a push and maybe beat the NWO?
Yeah, I think so, but you got to remember, later on, the NWO is going to lay down the three of them in the ring for what was it, you know, the Horsemen, remember that?
Yeah, that was actually before Hennig turned, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it wasn't that they weren't getting their due. The thing is, you've got to keep putting the heat on the heels. That's what got you there. If you start letting off the gas, if you stop pouring the gas on the fire is going to go out.
With, like, the Horsemen in general, was Flair having a lot of, you know, problems backstage? Just, like, not kowtowing, but, you know, kind of being second fiddle to the NWO.
I'm sure he was, you know, and there was all kinds of camps. And, you know, there was a lot of mistrust on all of that. But it was a very difficult time to get people to accept people's word with one another.
From the Wrestling Classic, were there any other creative plans for Bret Hart when he first came into WCW? Did the screw job change the way Bret Hart entered the company?
It should have really changed for the better, but, you know, that finish set the company back, and from what I gather, has kind of said he wasn't high on Bret, am I right?
Yes, for whatever reason. Yeah, it seemed like it.
Yeah. So, whatever happened, something changed.
Did the screw job change, like, the way Bret entered the company at all? Like, would you have, could have done it differently, or what do you think about that?
I think that was a perfect way for him to enter. You know what I mean? Don't you? I mean, he just got screwed.
So But then you guys had him be the referee for Bischoff and Zbyszko and the control. Like, you know what I mean? Like, as far as you guys, the way you used him, it was almost like, wow, he got screwed over there. He should have came in and said he was a real world champion. He should have went right after Hulk, or, you know, he should have been right towards, I know you had Hulk Sting going on, but maybe he should have went right to the top and really just, you know, cemented himself. Say, hey, I'm the WWF champion right now.
My idea was he should have hit the ring and got Sting disqualified when Sting had Hogan beat, and they could have come back in a three-way.
Interesting. Do you like three-way dances in general, or do you like one-on-one matches better?
I like one-on-one matches generally, but done the right way, it's a very intriguing match.
So Brett, really, I mean, he wasn't strong in general. The rumor is that Hulk was always not a Bret Hart guy. Is that true?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Didn't Bret and Anvil used to do handicap jobs for Hogan?
Well, he'd beat the, you know, he'd beat the crap out of stuff. Yeah, I mean, all the time. So you're saying he kind of saw him in a certain light where he didn't see him as main eventer?
Right. I think that's the only thing I can think of.
Is it size? He wasn't big enough for Hogan?
I don't know. You know, I think Hogan thought he was bland.
Because the big rumor is, and Brett says it, you know, it's in his book and everything, he was supposed to fight Hogan at SummerSlam 93, and they even filmed, or, you know, had photography of it, Brett and Hogan together kind of fighting a tug-of-war style over the belt. And obviously Brett, you know, was going to be the champion going into that. But then they kind of change directions completely, and they go with Yokozuna because Hogan wanted a job to Yoko because he says he's a big monster. He didn't want a job to Brett. So, I mean, that obviously started the issue from the Brett camp. But it seemed like Hogan never was on Brett's side as far as, like, wanting to wrestle him, work him, or job to him either.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, that's a great dream match that could have happened a million times and never really happened. I mean, they had that kind of schmoz on Nitro, and Brett ended up turning heel in the match, and that it never really had a finish to it. But that's a dream match that they're like, wow, how the hell did that not really happen, Hogan and Brett?
Right, right. I have no idea.
Here's another question about the Montreal Screwjob from KC. Do you think the Montreal Screwjob would have happened if Medusa hadn't dropped a belt in the trash can?
I don't connect the dots there, do you?
So basically, and I think I know where Casey's coming from here, is basically Vince saw Medusa drop the title in the garbage can, so he was afraid that Brett was going to do the same thing. He was going to take the WWF title to WCW and trash it on TV. So he was thinking to himself,
no, I'm going to cut you off. Don't mean to, but he was never going to allow him to leave the WWF belt. There's no way.
To me, I kind of see where Casey's coming from, though. Like, Vince sees that, like, oh, my God, they're throwing my title in the trash can.
Yeah,
Imagine if it was the world belt.
I
yeah.
I see what you're saying, but do you think Vince would even let that thought enter his mind that he's going to let a guy leave with his belt? No, no. Good question, though.
Yeah. Jeff Ronquillo has a question along the same vein. What are your thoughts on the Montreal Screwjob? Work or shoot?
I'm still not convinced.
Wow. Could have been a work.
Cameras were there, right? Filming the documentary?
Yep.
How many people saw Brett punch McMahon?
Ooh. It's definitely not on camera. I don't know. Yeah, not many, right?
Everything else was.
Yep.
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm taking them for the word that it was, but who knows? Who knows?
The documentarian had an interesting thing that he said that I kind of like to raise an eyebrow to. I think it's a shoot, but like sometimes I kind of think it's a little bit of work just because something that like some of the guys say, like he's like, you're right, exactly what you're saying. Didn't really film Vince getting beat up by Brett and stuff, but the filmmaker goes, oh, now we have our ending. You know what I mean? That's like a weird thing to say. It's like...
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
I love speculating about it. I think shoot, but I love speculating that it could have been
yeah.
the work.
Yeah. Gives us something to talk about.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
From Big Wig, speaking of the Hart Foundation, why didn't the Hart Foundation reform in WCW with Brett, Davey Boy, and Anvil all there at the same time?
Wanted to go by himself. And they wanted to push Brett by himself. And they might have thought the other two guys were holding him back.
Was there ever any thought of bringing Owen Hart in?
Yeah, there was a lot of thought. But not sure where that went.
The next question is from Tommy Turn. How freaked out was Sting when he had to come down from the rafters?
On what occasion?
I guess he means all of them. When he had to jump down from the tippy top of the building sometimes.
I think I'd be a little nervous, that's for sure. I mean,
yeah, he did some crazy jumps, too.
Yeah, he sure did. He sure did.
Helicopter, remember one time he came down from the helicopter?
Yeah.
One time he came down from the rafters, and then he attached DDP to him, and then he went right back up. I mean, it was some scary stuff.
Yeah. Crazy stuff.
So the next question is from Sean Mackey. Had Sting been tanned, prime, and engaged following his 1997 Starrcade win, what was the long-term plan going forward? How long was he supposed to keep the title for, and would that have delayed Goldberg from winning it when he did?
Yeah, it would have delayed Goldberg, that's for sure. I mean, they fell off of Sting when he came back, you know, and I don't need to repeat what everybody said about him, but it really kind of made the company switch directions. And I think Sting was one. If you say WCW to me, I think it's Sting.
Do you think that he was okay mentally after Starrcade? You know, the joke that Bischoff always says he wasn't tan, and, you know, we talked about in the show, was he mentally ready to be back at that point? Like, did you guys think he was going to be raring to go, and were you going to give him the title for a long period of time?
Yeah, it was, you know, he's going to keep the belt for a long time. Now, I'm not sure where they saw him mentally different, but they did.
Do you think there was also a power play by Hogan to keep himself in the scene longer?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the question we should be asking.
Yeah. Do you think he was good enough, like good enough shape, tan enough, if you will? Do you think Sting was good enough at that point?
How many people did they draw for that pay-per-view?
700,000.
Okay, that answers your question.
Yeah. Just curious, like, could you have stepped in at any point and were like, you know, Nick Patrick, I know maybe it's hindsight, but could you have stepped in at all and said, like, okay, this is exactly how it needs to go down, or you weren't really ready? You weren't, that's like an unpredictable thing where all of a sudden Nick Patrick doesn't do what he's supposed to do.
How can you predict that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess it's hard to say. Never seen it before. You know what I mean? And you haven't really seen it since either.
No. I mean, it was crazy.
Why wasn't Nick Patrick fired?
Probably an error call.
Just logically speaking, like if the guy screws up the biggest finish the pay-per-view ever, wouldn't he get in trouble? You know what I mean? Just logically?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to be a super detective to figure this one out. Right?
Yeah, he was protected from those on high for that.
Right.
So Caleb Perkins says, do you remember any of the plans for the NWO-WCW roster split that was rumored to be at the end of 97 and early 98? Were there going to be separate pay-per-views, separate titles, separate announce crews, etc.?
I think that was just a wish, and it never was going to come to fruition. You know what I mean? You know, it's a great idea, but it gets too convoluted. And because of that, we saw how convoluted the NWO got. I don't think it would have worked. Great idea, but it wouldn't have worked. And I think they saw that logistically. They couldn't have. I don't think that Turner was going to go for it either.
So it was like a thought, but it was never put into motion.
Right.
The next question is from Thomas Bookwalter. Was there any ideas to make one of the regular announcers like Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, or Mike Tenay an NWO sympathizer? I know the Brain did for basically one night. I know Dusty turned heel, but was there any thought given to having a regular NWO commentator?
No, because you got a WCW show. Why would you have... The whole thing is those guys supposedly didn't work for the company, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how can you have a commentator that's a NWO sympathizer?
I guess maybe just like a heel kiss-ass announcer that was rooting against WCW for some reason, I guess. Could be.
Could be. I mean, it's wrestling. Could be. But wouldn't he be fired for the people that give him the check? I mean,
yes.
If we want to pay...
Yep.
Logic.
Because even Heenan was a heel, but he hated the NWO. Yeah.
Right.
So next question is from WCW Rewritten Fan. Was there ever any thought given to using Dusty Rhodes as an occasional wrestler on big PPVs like he did with Larry Zbyszko and Roddy Piper, particularly representing WCW against the NWO? If not, why not?
Yeah, there was a lot of it. I don't think it could come together on a contract.
Who would you have wanted Big Dust to wrestle?
Anybody. Him and Hogan would have drawn all kinds of money. Him and Hall would have drawn Nash. I mean, he would have been great with anybody.
Yeah, that's funny because he doesn't really wrestle really until the end of WCW. And it's him and Dustin against Slayer and Jeff Jarrett match we talked about before. But, yeah, that's interesting that he, all those years before, he probably could have been wrestling because he wrestles after that a lot.
Right.
And if you remember, he goes to ECW, fights Steve Corino, and they have a great match.
Right.
Man, we were talking about Vader and LOD before we get to NWO. Dusty against the NWO, like wrestling, not just as an announcer, would have been cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Dusty would have been a big draw against them.
The next question, AJB. What were your plans with Rick Martel as the television champion before his career was cut short due to injury?
You can never have enough talent like Rick Tell. He would have rose to the top. Fabulous performer. I brought him into the United States. I went to Calgary for a short time, met him, and I got him booked in Florida. And he was great talent. One of the unsung heroes of the wrestling business.
That was pretty remarkable that he came in as a television champion, a feud with Booker T and stuff, just because it was like, wow, where the hell did Martel, like, where was he, where did he come from? He came back in great shape. He could still work. Was that your call to bring him back in, really,
yes.
Or was that Bischoff?
That was mine. We were dear friends.
What's he up to lately?
Oh, he's well healed. He's got all kinds of business in Quebec City. He doesn't have to do anything.
I saw somebody had pictures of him from an autograph sign that he did at his house, like a private signing. Looked great.
Yeah, he would, too. Yeah.
The next Next question is from Mark for Life. We've all heard the Goldberg and Regal side. We've heard both of their sides to their story of what was supposed to happen in the Goldberg-Regal match. If you remember, it gets a little stiff, and it seems like they're kind of shooting on each other. But the question was Regal supposed to have a competitive match with Goldberg? What was your take on it? Was it supposed to be a squash, a competitive match? And did Regal take liberties with Goldberg during the match?
I think I always got along with William Regal. I think he heard what he wanted to hear about the match. And he thought that he did what he was asked to do. But the translation was different, seen by a lot of people. That's all. And it didn't kill Goldberg. And what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So maybe Goldberg actually needed something like that.
Were you surprised in the back? Like, okay, this is not going exactly, you know.
Yeah, but hey, sometimes we go talk about boxing, right? You think a guy's knocking guys out all the time. And he's just going through Tyson, going through guys. And then Tyson hit that guy, not Dwayne Bobick.
Trevor Burbick?
Trevor Burbick. Didn't they have, no, he went through Trevor Burbick. But one, he went 15 rounds with, or 12 rounds, rather. And nobody saw that one coming. So this didn't kill Goldberg like people thought it did. In fact, I think it kind of helped him where people saw, hey, this guy's legit. You know what I mean? It broke up the pack.
That was so interesting with Regal because it was, like, surprising, though. You know what I mean? It's like you're watching, like, wow, something's going on here. Like, Regal is, you know, he's taking it to him a little bit.
Right. Right. He did.
So, Luis Mendoza has a question for you. In the same vein with Regal. It says, Regal has stated that he was fired several weeks after the Goldberg incident, and the firing was possibly related to his demons and not the incident. Can you tell us the real reason why Regal was fired?
I don't know the real reason, but I think he's right. I think it was the problems he had back then.
Related to drugs and substance abuse problems?
Yeah, I don't think it had anything to do with Goldberg.
Now, just going back to Tyson for a second, he did knock out Trevor Burbick in the second round. Tony Tucker might have been who you're thinking of. He went 12 rounds with Tony. Wow.
Yeah. I just watched that fight about a month ago. Yeah. Never thought that would happen, right?
No. Wow. Yeah. I don't even remember that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I know, some guys, I guess, are tougher than you think.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Wallitzer, whose idea was it to put Sting in the Wolfpack?
I think they all got together and thought that was the way to go. When I say they all, Sting and Nash and Hall, I think they thought that was the way to go.
That night that he joins the Wolfpack and he turns, the pop is tremendous. I mean, huge pop. Very typical of Sting. If everybody really watches those big moments, Sting always gets one of the biggest pops of all time. I mean, it's great. But it's one of those things where, like, okay, where do you go from here? You know what I mean? Like, him joining originally got a great pop, but, like, it didn't go anywhere.
Right. Right.
Not a big fan of Sting in the red face paint, either.
I didn't either. Funny that you said that. Yeah. So.
That sometimes is good, like that initial pop, but like you got to be able to follow up. I know you always said that you need a follow up.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay.
Rick Hughes has a question in the same vein. Was there ever any consideration of putting Goldberg in the NWO Wolfpack?
No. No. Not that I know of, anyway.
So let's end the questions here. We got to a bunch of them today. let's head it towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website tmptempire.com. And, of course, check out Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. And go to his Pro Wrestling Tees store, ProWrestlingTees.com, and visit the Kevin Sullivan store. Kevin, what else got going on?
Well, visit the Amazon, that wrestling old school. You can pick it up. It's very interesting. It's wrestling meets the Sopranos. JP, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll see you here next week.
Yes. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. See you right back here next week for a little Test Match Talks. See you next week, folks.
The madness has officially begun, and it's time for you to shoot your shot and score big on the nonstop action with MyBookie. It doesn't matter whether you're filling out multiple brackets, betting the national championship winner, or simply looking for player and game props. MyBookie has you covered. Sign up today at MyBookie and use the promo code TASKMASTER to secure a first deposit bonus up to $1,000. It's simple, folks. Put in $200 and play with $300. Just use the promo code TASKMASTER and claim your bonus. College ball, NBA, and UFC, no matter the sport, no matter the minute, MyBookie puts the action in your hands with in-game live betting. And with the choice from thousands of lines and odds, you can turn any game day into payday. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Just don't forget to use that promo code TASKMASTER. Remember, you can bet anything, you can bet anytime, you can bet anywhere with MyBookie.
There's been problems between the Horsemen and the Dungeon of Doom, but now they're down just between two men. Kevin Sullivan and the Dungeon of Doom and Chris Benoit, the Horsemen, as they prepare for the Great American Bash, where pinfalls count anywhere. Take a look.
You and I, but you've still never given me a straight answer pertaining to the Dungeon of Doom and Kevin Sullivan.
Let me just assure you, don't worry about that deal. We got it smoothed out, Sullivan and I do.
Wait a minute. You got a problem with me and him being friends? If you got a problem with that, why don't you come to me, no horseman style, around the back and start talking? If you got the direction to come to, say something to me.
How many times did I tell you not to trust the Dungeon of Doom? What Kevin Sullivan was, what the Giant was, what Jimmy Hart was all about. Through this again, let me tell you something. I specialize in slapping horsemen around. Don't tempt your fate with the Tripler. Don't try to gain any recognition by classifying us as being the same. I am in a league of my own.
Sullivan is draped across Benoit.
They're going for the big papa. That's what they call this, the big papa.
Is he holding him or what?
Oh!
Look at Benoit, he's hurt, he is hurt bad.
Unbelievable.
Sullivan moved that away and Benoit is out.
Benoit happens to be a serpent in the egg. And nobody knows better than me about serpents. You see, Iron Rick, I'm going to do you a favor. At the Great American Bash, I'm going to squash that serpent in the egg. Because if I don't, that serpent someday, Iron, is going to turn around and want to be the enforcer of the Four Horsemen. Well, I don't care about the...